Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 49, Brett Bartlett. This is the second of three, which I'm calling triple threat sellers. They sell anywhere from $5 million, have sold, or will sell $5 million to $10 million this year. One of them, perhaps it's this guy, will exceed the $10 million mark. Get ready for a lot of information. We cover a lot of territory. The challenge with Brett is he is into many, many things. And more importantly, he knows so much about many, many things. He's very humble. He's very generous with his time. One of the nicest people you'll meet. And he's the real deal. And we spend a lot of time in this segment talking about eBay specific, because I love his eBay business. It's just fascinating when you hear it. You'll never realize that these businesses exist. But what's so cool is he's been doing it for 4 years. Just imagine scaling a business from garage sales. I mean, it's just incredible to me. And he'll tell you it's his most profitable division. And I just think it's fascinating. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And man, I can't wait to get started with this interview because my mind is racing. I have 1,000 questions. I'll never get them all out. But this guy, first off, is a dude. You're okay if I call you a dude, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you're definitely a dude. You're always smiling. I don't know, is that a natural smile? Is it a fake smile? Because it seems plastered on your face. And I just love, I love your perspective. You just seem maybe content. Is that a good word for you?
Yeah, I try to live like that for sure.
Okay. And so it's a California thing for sure, but I just love, I love the style. I love everything about it. Welcome, Brett Bartlett. Welcome, Brett.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Man, I'm telling you, you are everywhere doing everything. I mean, there's not a I look at Facebook every day and I see something coming through from you or Jim Cockrum and, you know, about some new program that you're doing, or I go to an event and you're speaking at it, or Josh is at an event. I was in Chicago and I met Josh, who works for you and, you know, part of your team. And it just, you guys are everywhere doing everything. Would you, well, I guess it's intentional, and I guess we can get to that. But I guess we should go way back. I wanted to ask, were your parents entrepreneurs, or were they – because you have a college degree.
Yep. I mean,
were they entrepreneurs, or did they want you to be a doctor, or what did they want?
You know, it's funny. My mom always wanted to kind of be an entrepreneur, but I think she had that story that everyone else has where, you know, different life responsibilities kind of kept her from – completely diving in into, you know, that dream. My dad, on the other hand, has always been super encouraging for me, but he was always talking about how I will make a really good employee someday because I'm
so,
he could always go, man, you're going to be such a great employee for someone because, you know, you're so smart and, you know, you're great to be around and you can talk to people. And so I actually, never intended to be an entrepreneur. My parents definitely, you know, I was not raised on that.
Were they disappointed when you decided to leave the job that you had and say, hey, I'm going to go, I'm, you know, I've been making money on the side. Dad, you got to see this. This is crazy. This internet thing. Were they disappointed? I mean, did you feel that?
I felt like they were really scared for sure. Hmm. I'd say scared and confused. They trust what I do. Or they trust that I'm going to try to make the best decision, but they were definitely very scared. I, you know, I had a nice track that I was on for a job, and so it was pretty clear where I could get to. And when I left that, I think that's the part, the confused, scared part that I saw, not only from my parents, but from peers and, as well.
Looking back at it now, I bet you those peers, especially at the college level, you worked at a college, right?
Yeah.
I bet you those peers are so envious saying, my God, I wish I didn't have to go to work today because I have a job.
Yeah, a lot of those peers have actually applied to work with us. So it's an interesting switch for
sure.
That's
funny.
It went from Brett, you're crazy to, hey, you know, can I come work for you?
I want piece of this. Yeah. But, you know, I think that that preparation, right? I mean, I think that, that you had a job where you were helping guide students, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, A, that's what you're still doing today, right?
For sure.
Wait, you have a team of 50 and you're guiding, right? So that's a big piece of it. And you have all these programs, this Online Empire Academy, the Online Empire Academy. Got to make sure I get that the in there because that's how the URL is. But I see that continuing. So, you know, I interviewed Joy Packard and she talked about your why, right? Mm-hmm. And she said one thing will lead to another. And that's going to be, you know, your why. And so you've been preparing for this kind of your whole life.
For
and
sure.
Even the job at the college would have taken you there. So I just think that's really cool. It's neat that you're able to still do it. Does it feel like a job yet for you in any way?
You know, there's good days and bad days for sure. I am in the people business. And so because, you know, I do have a high priority on investing into team members and people that are part of our storyline. There's days when it's tougher depending on the people and the situation. And then there's days where I wouldn't trade it for anything else. And so I would never call it a job because I remember how I felt when I had a regular job, but there's just different challenges that come up every single day. Some of the challenges I enjoy and some of them I dread.
The thing I always loved about your story was I love the garage sale team, right?
I
just love the way you were able to take that. Is the garage sale team still out there?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that piece of the model is still there.
Yeah,
I just want to go through a couple pieces you have, right?
Yeah.
So you have that the garage sale team where they're out there looking for items generally for Amazon, right? I mean, I know you sell on other channels too.
Actually, our garage sale now is 80% eBay.
No kidding.
Yep.
Now, why is that? Do you think it's because the Amazon new item stuff is drying up?
Yeah,
are there more
totally.
Competitors?
That's exactly why. Basically, you know, a 35-year-old who has a brand new, you know, speaker, Bose speaker system, they know that that thing's $400, and it's not super hard for them to go log on to Amazon.com and list it themselves. So those are becoming less and less. And the things that we find more and more, just the other day we sold this vintage Star Wars toy for $1,000. You know, that's an extreme example.
Gosh.
But, you know, it's more stuff like that where it's like kind of like a, you know, American Pickers type of mentality.
Well, that's going to make the training that much harder, right? Because
for sure.
In the old days it was like, look, hey, let's go to this place. We're going to scan these barcodes.
Yeah.
And if it says, if the device, you know, if Chris Green's device says,
that's
do
right.
this, then you do this, right? Now you've got to have an eye and you got to say, common, 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 common. Whoa, there's something different.
Right.
How do you go about starting that out?
Man, it's pretty hard. I will say that. I have learned the hard way. You get what you pay for in training. And so when I first started doing any type of training, it was like, hey, look, spend an hour with me. You get it. Good. All right, go do it. And the results of that were very poor. And just in general, when we train different things, basically what we try to do is we really put them through a process. And part of that process specific to garage sailing is first you have to, kind of sit down and just understand the dynamics of so like a one-on-one mentorship of just sitting down and getting information. Then you actually go out and have to shadow a person. And then you have to go out again for about 3 or 4 weeks. You have to be with a mentor on that process. And then either you pass or you don't. We actually don't continue sending you out if we don't feel like you're going to get it. And then that's it. That's the process. So it's probably close to get someone even at the first level of going out by themselves. It's about a 5-week process.
And some people deselect themselves saying, you know what, this isn't for me, right?
100%. I'd say the majority of the time, they remove themselves, and we don't have to do anything on that side.
Now, how do you handle, you know, I mean, especially with garage sales, how do you handle the cash controls? I'm an accountant by trade and controller, so that's a concern I have. How do you handle that?
Yeah, so our first rule of thumb is we never hire anyone that we don't completely trust. That's the first thing, because you're right. Garage sales, we can't send people out with a checkbook or, you know, a credit card. And so on the cash side, we have spreadsheets, we have everything like that. I mean, it's pretty, could someone skim a Subway sandwich off of us? For sure. Easy. But for the most part, because we've been doing this for so long, we actually know our areas so well. We are able to really look at different things and go, huh, that, you know, paying that much for an item typically in that area are coming back empty-handed, but having spent this much money, that is atypical. You know, right, can you right. explain so you, that to me? You know, that type of thing.
So they're guide rails. Do you? So this is an interesting question because again, I like the technical side. So I go to a garage sale and I buy four different items and I spend $12, right? Because I'm a pilot, right? I'm a bundler. I put all that stuff together. And say, hey, I'll give you $12, right? Do they allocate it for you when they bring it back? Are they saying, here's where I spent the $12?
Yeah, they have to go line by line on each.
Okay,
item.
And so that makes the accounting pretty simple when they bring it in and somebody's checking them in and they're so when you assign a cost of goods to that product, it's pretty simple. That
yeah,
piece.
It's pretty straightforward on that side. Like I said, if someone really wanted to skim like a Subway sandwich, that'd probably be easier to skim. You know, they don't go out with thousands of dollars in their hands. They go out with, you know, maybe $100. And so it's kind of like you can look at the line. We've been doing this for 4 years now every weekend. So it's pretty hard to see something and go, oh, man, you know, we've never seen that before. The line items speak for themselves.
Do you have a profile of what a successful buyer? Can you kind of look in a group and have a conversation with somebody and say, oh, you'd be good at this?
Yeah, it's a person who's grown up. You know what, with the current model, a person who's grown up either going to thrift stores or being part of something vintage. So like if in their family, if that was if thriftiness was passed down in their family, they are the perfect people that typically only take 3 weeks to be our very best garage sailors.
And how long, I mean, would you say that, I mean, is that an entry point for when you're bringing in people into your business? Is that the place you typically put them to start out?
Yeah. Well, no, typically they start in the warehouse now.
Okay. So they're in the warehouse.
They'll be packing boxes. Yeah.
And you identify that trade on somebody and say, hey, he might be a good, you know.
We leave the invitation open to everyone because we really like having a lot of garage sailors, especially in the high season. And with people who are in the warehouse, but like you said, what ends up happening, I mean, no joke, after 2 weeks, let's say 20 people were trying, maybe three are left. They just either didn't like it. I mean, a lot of these kids are young too. And so you're like, hey man, we need you to wake up at 4:30 on a Saturday. And so that alone drops off like 80% of our work staff who wants to possibly do it on a Saturday.
I think the fact that you've been doing it for 4 years, I think, you know, I always find that people try something for a few weeks or whatever. Oh, I'm going to do this, the shiny object, right? I chase that. Oh, this is a great business. And then it goes away. And in 4 years, is it a separate vertical in your business? I mean, is it a separate P&L on it?
It's its own thing, really. And that's how it operates, too. It's actually still, if you looked at it from like a profitability side, it's our most profitable.
Well, that's what I was getting to. What is it, you know, if you looked at it from year one to year four, what would we see if we were looking at the revenue line? What would we see? Is it going up to the right?
Yeah, no, totally.
Okay,
it's
so
slow,
it's fine.
Though. It's not as you can't grow it as fast. It has different constraints built into it based off of things that we can't control. And so if you looked at the different growth, the growth side of our business, you would see this one as a slow graph going up. And that's mainly because the different things you pointed out, it's really hard to train people to get them good. It's hard to keep a consistent team going. And then most of all, even though we do live in Southern California and the weather is nice a lot of the time, there's specific seasons that are very high seasons. And so those are the times where you see huge spikes and you see our growth. But overall, it's trending up. It's just much more difficult to scale that one to the degree of what we've done with some other parts of our business.
Have you been able to hold your margin?
Yeah. Our margin got better, actually.
Oh, okay. So if your revenue is going up and your margin got better, you made more money.
Yeah. Our margin got better because we typically – let's use the Bose speaker system. Let's say someone had a Bose speaker system on their lawn, right? Well, maybe it sells for $200 on Amazon. But they know that, and they're like, hey, look, man, I just didn't want to list it on Amazon. I'll sell it to you for $80, right? And you're like, oh, cool, I'll make some money. That sounds good. The new model that we run, because we run eBay mainly on garage sales now, you know, to give a good example, you know, it'd be a very typical example would be something like this. A VCR. I don't know if you know. Do you know VCRs are really valuable on eBay?
Yes.
Okay, so a VCR, you know, you pay $4, right? And it sells for 35, right? Well, that's an amazing margin on that side. And then you can even get more extreme things you're paying a buck or two for on eBay, a buck for a vintage shirt, and you sell it for 25.
Right.
And so those are huge margins. It's just a different type of model.
Now, you're bringing these back to your warehouse in California?
Yes.
And so, you know, you're shelving, cleaning, stacking, input, photo, studio, the whole deal from there, or are you outsourcing any of that?
eBay is 100 – all of our stuff is in-house. We don't do,
okay.
Yeah, we don't do – we don't really have the VA component. That's why we have such a large staff.
Okay.
And that was more my choice just because, like I said, I kind of what you pointed out, I have a value – the part of the job or the dream that I enjoy in this is investing into the younger generation. And so for me, our entire staff is basically 25 and under. And the eBay side is completely self-sufficient. I very, very rarely have to get involved on the eBay side, which I love. I literally get a check every month on the eBay side. So it's great. But yes, we do all of our own pictures, everything. It's basically two guys back there. I got them a TV. I got them. They have their own. They're called the E-Boys, and they just do their thing.
Do they have hats or something?
They are awesome. I love them. And I literally will pop back there once in a while and, you know, just ask them if they need anything. And that's about it, though. Not much more than
For
that.
For some reason, I envision Bill and Ted.
It's totally.
Excellent. But,
it is
yeah,
totally
I could
that.
See them. I could just tell. Yeah, you got them a TV. I mean, of all things to get them. A TV,
yep,
so they could
love
jam
it.
Out.
That was a big deal. They had to have their TV back there.
That's cool, though. You know, it's so neat that you've been able to grow that vertical over time. Because as everybody said, oh, eBay's dead, and this and that. I disagree. I mean, I sell a ton on eBay, so I love that piece of it. Now, do you still do RA to a scale level?
That is actually one that almost is. I wouldn't use the word irrelevant in our business because we'd still consider something like that. That was the one that when we penciled it out, like from – what's a good word for it? So the scaling of that was very, very expensive. And
yeah.
It makes sense. Okay, so you're a numbers guy. You're going to totally get this. Think about it this way, right? You're paying someone $10 to $15 an hour to go get the stuff, right? And in retail arbitrage, you're paying a premium – for the product, essentially, right? You're not getting it closed out or wholesale. So,
right.
You know, you are typically paying a higher price for the item. So your cost of goods are higher. And the biggest pain point that we experienced in this process was the sell-through component. And so you stack all that cash on the front side when you're doing the retail arbitrage. So let's say, you know your labor, which it is more labor intensive as well, meaning sending someone out to scout and then having to pay for the – so scouting, cost of goods, plus the prep and pack, those three components together are a lot of cash on the front side. And what we saw starting to happen, the volatility that was kind of the dagger, was when a lot of people came in to follow the same model and prices weren't stable, let's say the prices would vacillate, go up and down. What happens at those moments is we don't want to take a loss on the inventory because we've already stacked so much cash into it. We would then wait for it to come together, but you know, we're in a cash flow business. We buy inventory. That started to really stack up on us. And it's not that I'm against the model. It's more like for us to scale it, we needed a ton of money.
Yeah.
So
and I imagine you can't travel well out there. You know, it's not easy to get from point A to point B, right? You're in California,
yeah.
Southern California.
Right.
And so all those things, right, that labor is basically fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And they could go to a store looking for these 12 items and only four of them be there.
Right. Exactly.
And that's another big – so you couldn't even control the inventory that you were buying.
Right.
You couldn't count on it. Let me say it that way.
No,
as a matter
that's
what,
exactly right?
Right.
That's exactly right. The numbers just didn't come together on that one.
I think it's a great model for a single person,
totally.
You know, trying to support themselves.
100%
I think once you try to get up to any level. So, okay, so we went through there. How about online arbitrage? How are you doing with that?
We really don't. That's more on the side of – we do a little bit. I shouldn't say that. We put it this way. We pay a couple – so we have three buildings. Well, actually, no, we have four. I'm sorry. We have kind of like if you just picture like we kind of have like our office admin buildings and then we have two warehouses. We're able to help supplement our rent costs. That's kind of a good way to look at our numbers on that with online arbitrage. You don't get as big of a ding on the labor side, but we really just have one person who's doing the online arbitrage side, and then it just kind of flows into our warehouse, and a couple of people know what to do with it at that point in time.
It fills in the gaps, right?
Yeah.
So you got that one person covers right. their cost, covers the labor that you already have standing around. You want to have product moving at all times. Otherwise, right. you're really losing money on it, right? So that
right.
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump into wholesale.
Wholesale, I'm really starting to enjoy wholesale a lot more. Our bread and butter is creating unique bundles on wholesale. And so we're getting very, very good at Amazon sponsored ads and search. And so we actually don't, the thing that I hate the most now on Amazon specifically is to list against a current listing.
Right.
We create all of our unique listings and then optimize it for maximum performance. So that's really where a lot of our wholesale goes, actually. I'm really enjoying wholesale.
Well, and I think the way you described it at CES, and I know, is that the course that you and Jim have out right now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And so it's, you know, the guy sitting in the audience heard, basically you are creating your own listing, but you're, everything about it is perfect, right? First off, you're controlling the photo, you're making sure all the information is perfect, but you also went out and did what people were looking for. You know what they're searching for, and you have several versions of what they're searching for. You put all that in there and put it together. And so when somebody searches, it's not a, hey, they might not find me. They're going to find you.
Right. Sure.
Right, no matter what.
Yep.
And so you're up in the top. And then does it become an issue of price, or is because
totally.
You put so much more effort into it, are you able to charge a little bit of a premium?
Yeah, you know what's funny is at the end of the day, you know, you can charge premiums on Amazon, but it's just simple economics, supply and demand.
Right.
And you just have to be realistic on what you can charge and what you can't charge. And so I'd say there's about a 30% swing up and down. From, you know, a median price point that we go with our wholesale. So if we do a really good job on search and we're very relevant, we can charge maybe 30% more. If we maybe overestimated, we're going to have to be more price competitive, and then we're going to have to, you know, teeter down 30% from the median price.
Are there any efficiencies in scale because you have a studio for eBay? Did that help?
Oh,
does that
yeah, man.
Help
we,
you now with the bundles?
We got a sweet setup for photos. We got a
okay,
sweet
so,
setup.
And you can move it through all your products.
Because yeah.
what I want to do is I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the thing that I know you're most excited about, and I think our audience is going to be most excited about, your private label business, mm-hmm. and more importantly, your own website. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Excited to bring on a new sponsor today, YourSourcedInventory.com. That's YourSourcedInventory.com, where they focus on shoes and clothing, great gated categories, high average selling price. Remember that high average selling price with a good return of investment means more profit in your pocket. Here's some stats they sent me for September. In shoes, they averaged the top 2%, average rank of 7,000, net profit of almost $30 with an ROI of 89%. Those are good numbers. Clothing, top 2 to 3%, average rank was 4,000. $1,132, net profit of about $12, and ROI, again, of 104%. Those are great. These are online deals that are sent to you 5 days a week. You get 10 items a day. You're going to be able to grow your business from the comfort of your home. This is exactly what we needed for our business. It's the reason we're using them. So we think this is a great way that you can move forward in a great category. YourSourcedInventory.com. YourSourcedInventory.com. Okay, you have to be jazzed. I am still jazzed. Every time I listen to this, it just blows my mind the amount of detail, the level of detail what Brett is willing to share. It's just so real, and it is the real deal. If you haven't met him, you make it a point to. In this segment, he drops a lot of great information, and one of the points he makes is if you get an expert's time, a la via podcast, don't waste it. Ask questions. Be generous back, but ask questions. People will appreciate you asking questions and appreciate giving you the knowledge if they're genuine. Anyway, his point is that that's how you're going to grow. You've got to have a mentor, and he credits his father-in-law as his mentor, and he said he would be nowhere without him. In this segment, we speak about buying retail arm, online arm, wholesale, private label. We go through the gamut and what's working, what's not working, how it works. We also spend some time talking about how his business is set up in modules and one business complements the other. He has a centralized photo studio. He has a centralized shipping department, centralized inventory department, centralized IT, and that's a loose term. I don't want to use IT. More, you know, services, web services, and that kind of division. He's got all that stuff figured out so he can take and just use it within his business. If you want to scale a business to any level, you know, think of corporate shared service centers, you know, where those common functions that are done or similar or like functions are done by a group of people who specialize in them. It gives you the ability very quickly to get into a market. It gives you the ability to very quickly scale a market, and it will save you money and save you time and give everyone focus. So I think that's a real piece of the interview that was just an eye-opening, well-thought-out piece of Brett's business. So let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Brett Bartlett. And, man, I'm telling you, if you're not pumped now, oh, my God, I'm jazzed. I'm really jazzed. I do these recordings at night. It's tough for me to get to sleep because my mind just races, and it just I learn something every minute I talk to somebody. So I love smart people. So we went through the most common models, right? The one that I'm excited, I know you're most excited and most proud about is private label.
Right.
But you've taken private label to different levels. So let's talk I love reading your story where you ended up buying somebody's makeup, or was it their health and beauty product?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that way back in the beginning?
No, this is pretty recent. It's really one of our big pillar products now. So,
can you explain anything about what you do there?
Yeah, no problem.
You can be vague.
I don't mind that. That's not the problem. It's more along the lines. I think there's a big misconception, in my opinion, around something, you know, around the word private label. So, like, you know, by definition, private label is where you take a very commonly produced product and put your label on it, right? Mm-hmm. What we realized was it's very difficult. I shouldn't say you can't, because I know a lot of people are doing very well, you know, doing the opposite of what I'm about to say, but at least I didn't enjoy the process of, just finding a product that had some traction on Amazon and trying to sell it. And so when we started looking into quote private label opportunities, we wanted to really sell some awesome products, some really, really good ones, like high quality that you'd be proud to attach your name to. And we realized the best opportunities for us actually popped up domestically. And what those opportunities were all these companies that produced an amazing product, right? But they did a terrible job of bringing it to market. And so what we did is we kind of stepped in and said, hey, look, if you let us kind of take over the brand, or either relabel the brand, but take your great high quality product and let us do our thing, you know, we can kind of take this to the moon and back.
Well, I want to ask a question on that. How do you have that conversation with somebody? Somebody put their life, their blood, their sweat, their tears into this thing, and you're coming in and saying, you know, obviously you're not saying your product sucks and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, how do you have that? I mean, it's a great concept.
Right.
I guess let's ask the first question. How do you recognize it, right? Do you see a product and you say, hey, it's bronze cream, you know, a California
right.
thing. I'm trying to relate
no,
to this.
No, for sure.
So it's bronze cream, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's great. They're not selling much. I mean, how do you know they're not selling much of it? How do you know how to improve it? And then the steps from there. So let's ask.
Yeah, so I'll walk you through real life examples here, okay? And so the first thing is you got to kind of earn the right to be heard. And we got known not on purpose, but just kind of the same way that you were telling different stories. The, you know, process of us starting with garage sales and doing all these different things, all of a sudden we were known as these people who can sell things, you know, on Amazon.
Okay.
And what would happen is you can kind of think how a friend tells a friend tells a friend, right? And what would, you know, what was once happening, let's say, you know, once every 3 months started to happen multiple times per week. And the conversation goes something like this. Hey, what's up? You know, my name's, you know, Tammy. I made, I 3 years ago, I really tried to launch this bronzer. And, you know, I went to trade shows and I just couldn't get it off the ground. I got it sitting in my warehouse. You know, would you be willing to do, you know, some type of win-win situation that, you know, will help me get rid of my product. My next step is always to say, hey, tell me the real story about this. Like, tell me the story about it. What products does it relate to? Like, what would you best compare it to from a quality side, you know, 1 to 10? So I try to do a lot of qualifying questions to vet out, like, hey, you know, is this person just trying to sling a really crappy product?
Right.
Or, you know, where's this fall from a high quality side? So for our beauty stuff that we bought, it was actually manufactured by like a premium beauty brand, and they just did a terrible job of bringing it to market. So this was millions of dollars of inventory that we stepped in on. And so there's opportunities like that out everywhere. There are tons of inventors.
Did you have to buy the product, or were you able to buy it as you sold it?
So we've done both. We've done both models. This one we did buy just because we wanted to lock it down, and we didn't want any option of anyone else being able to step in. And because if someone else would have smelled this, they would outbid us for sure, okay, without a doubt. Okay. On ones that are a little more, you know, borderline, like you don't know if they're going to be successful or not. And we had had a lot of beauty success. That's why we knew where we were going to take this one. On other ones where I've been like, man, I don't know the first thing about that product. On those items, we typically propose, this is usually what I'll do. I'll say, hey, look, if you let me get like 5 samples, I could run some tests and I'll be really honest with you on whether, you know, we're a good fit or not. And we'll run it through our process and see if it's even a viable product. We can usually see if something's a viable product within, on our side, we can see it within 5 and 7 days. We can kind of report back in about 14 days.
And I imagine having such a large young staff, a lot of women, right? I see, yep, the pictures, a lot of women. You have the ability to, you know, they'll tell you if they're going to buy it right away, right?
For,
I mean,
sure.
It's always a great tool.
It's a very, very quick, you're right. That's the first vetting process. Hey, would you guys use this? And they're like, oh, I love it. Or, man, that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen, you know?
But you bring up another, you brought up a point in there, and I was wondering about that. Trade shows. Have you been able to source products at trade shows where you see a good product but a lousy package, right? I mean, I've seen a ton of lousy packaging, right? Have you tried that venue yet?
Yeah. So it's weird. You know, we've gone to trade shows now a decent amount, and we get to meet with a good amount of suppliers. And, you know, at the end of the day, really for us, what we've realized is it comes down to the economics of the product. And so through our process, what we really try to do is validate the general, you know, go-to-market plan of it. And so here, we'll use a real example on this. Let's say someone has what's a good example of something that someone had? This will be relevant. Someone has an eye cream, right? And they come to me or I see them at a trade show, whatever. And I go, man, that sounds like a really great eye cream. And they're selling it for $22 wholesale, right? Well, mm-hmm. Now I'm going to vet the process because I'm going to at least want to sell that for $45, right? I can – the process that we can vet now is whether or not we can actually sell that product for $45. And so if I can't sell that thing for $45, I don't care. I really don't even step into the next part of the conversation. If I think it's a home run and I'm like, dude, I can sell this for $45 all day long, then I'd entertain the thoughts of, hey – you know, do you want to change the packaging? Hey, you know, would you be willing to team up on it? We get really creative in those situations.
Well, your goal was not to pay $22 either, right? Because you want to put some stake in the game, so you're trying to buy it even cheaper than that.
For sure.
So you can have a look. So where did you learn, or did you hire the talent that it takes to be able to vet a product and vet it very quickly?
So it's kind of it's come organically through pain, and you're right, through hiring some really smart people. So the pain of where it's come from is making a lot of bad buys. And what we had to do was get good at qualifying products before it came, you know, into our process, before we wrote a check for it. And the other part that we got stronger at was just having a staff that's very they have a very good pulse of what can possibly sell and not sell. And so that part of it too has really helped, because almost in an instant, you know, if I come in and say, hey, look, we need to try to sell this for 36, they're not always right. But at the same time, you know, they'd be like, dude, all day long I buy stuff like that, you know, for $19.99 from Target.
Yeah, and right. So why would I spend? Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. And so it's a, there is some natural vetting process. And we hired a couple of guys that were very, very good on eBay keywords and search terms, and it was a very natural evolution for them to come over to Amazon and apply that knowledge. But I mean, they made us 100 times better for sure.
Right. And so you're looking up at Amazon and you're seeing the eye cream and you're seeing that generally speaking, the decent stuff is selling for $39.99 to $69.99.
Right.
So that's probably a little piece of it, plus your staff. And then you can work on the packaging.
Right.
Are you open to people approaching you? If I put a link in the podcast that if they have a product in mind or they had something and they are looking to find a place to distribute it, because you know, it's not that easy,
no,
right? It really is not that
easy.
That's,
I'd say it's 98% of the work right there is knowing how to get it to be relevant.
Are you open to that?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do if you I don't know the best email Dean likes on that.
Online
onlineempireacademy.com or whatever the best contact info is on there, then it'll actually get tagged with a support ticket and everything. Otherwise, if it goes general email for me, it's a low percentage chance that I'll ever get to it.
It'll never get seen,
yeah.
Right? It gets buried. I understand it. So I will have a link, though, for people.
Cool.
If you have a product and you're saying, man, I know it's a product, I know it's real, I just don't know how to bring it to market.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'm in that circle. You never know. I mean, you never know.
Right.
I mean,
no, I agree with that.
There are people out there. Okay, so you've done lots of this stuff, but the dresses, I'm most interested to hear about the thing you're most proud of, your most recent baby, that you really don't do anything in anymore. But let's talk about how triplethreadco.com, www.triplethreadco.com came about.
Yeah, so it's an interesting story for sure. The clothing was the main reason why I even – so backstory, I never sold anything online. I totally had no clue what I was doing. My in-laws had a pile of high-end clothes that they got from a family friend, and they're like, hey, you know, why don't you try to sell this online to make some extra cash because I had a baby coming, everything like that. I said, cool. And that's what started me on purchasing Jim Cockrum's course, everything like that. And I kind of always knew we have very, very heavy connections in fashion and clothing. I mean, that is by far our best connections. So it's kind of always been my dream. The only problem is I know nothing about fashion. So this was one where just by nature, I had to hire a team around me that kind of knew what they were doing. And my dream was to, you know, build my own external website or external platform, you know, outside of an Amazon or eBay where I was in full control, meaning like I, you know, for good and bad, you know, we would dictate our own destiny. And that's kind of where Triple Thread birthed out of. It was out of having our best connections on that side, having a young staff that was excited to take that on. And really, there is no way Triple Thread would have ever existed if it was just me doing it. It would look terrible. The pictures would be terrible. I would have no clue what I'm buying. So it was a great learning experience of something from the beginning, not me not being directly involved in it from the buying side.
Was the vision to buy liquidation, you know, clothing and then just, you know, put it out on a shopping site, right? I mean, was that the original thought? I mean, it's not what it's evolved to. I mean, it's incredible what it's evolved to.
The original thought was more along the lines of this, hey, look, we have great connections to really high-end clothing, and we knew we can get it at competitive prices, extremely competitive. So, like, we were buying at the same places that, like, you know, Hot Look, all those different stores were buying at. We just didn't buy in volume yet to be relevant. And so the main concept was we knew we could be super price competitive. We knew it. And we just didn't know how to, again, kind of what we were talking about, we didn't know how to bring it to market. And through aches and pains, Triple Thread has kind of evolved into what you're kind of seeing. It's very picture driven. It's not Amazon standardized, and so it's more of a. We're trying to get it to have more of a personality behind it that people are proud to buy from, And also get, you know, an amazing deal on a piece of clothing that they would have to buy at Nordstrom's full price otherwise.
Are these name brand clothing? Like, I'm not seeing the names of any of these. I don't see any names that I would recognize anyway.
Yeah, so most of these are name brands. These would be found more in, like, your high-end boutiques or okay. – and again, this is – the suppliers we buy from also supply our big suppliers in the Nordstrom's and everything. But like, kind of what you're saying right now, I really don't know trending women's fashion to the least degree. And so the girls are out there most of the time doing the buying and everything like that. But yes, definitely this is not off-brand stuff. It's very, 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 very relevant.
Well, let's talk about the girls. Okay, so how many girls are there?
So on any given day, the core staff is about 5. Okay. They're the ones who do the orchestrating of it, and then it just seamlessly integrates with our warehousing components. So inventory management and processing, you know, just plugs into our current warehouse setup. The actual running of it is the separate part with the 5 girls.
Okay. And so they're doing the buying. They're out there looking at, you know, finding things, sourcing, I guess. Right. And they are, now, who's in charge of taking the photos? Because they're incredible. I mean, was this somebody's passion? I mean, it sure looks like it. It's amazing.
Well, I will pass that on to her just because it is. It's something me and her butt heads about all the time.
Well, some of them are a little risque, and I'm like, ooh, no. I'm a little uncomfortable with that one. I'm like, oh man,
it's more along the lines of I'm like, just get the photos up, and she'll be like, look, we got to make them awesome, and so. That's run by actually my sister-in-law, Leah. She is the one who really orchestrates the vision behind what it's going to look like. And again, I was just kind of lucky to have that in the family. And so she really is the one, leading the 5 girls in what they're doing day to day and also on what the website's going to look like.
It's incredible, though. I mean, I'm looking at the backgrounds, and, you know, I know I'm known as a fashion icon. I know in many circles my Dockers and golf shirt that I wear every single day, 7 days a week. I never change. When I'm looking at the background, I mean, the storage unit, and I can see the paints faded on the post, and I can see that she intentionally used that in the picture. It's just really – I mean, it's really, really clever. It is definitely on the level of some of the high-end websites that I've been to. It's just absolutely incredible. And – you know, I love somebody else on the web design. Tell us about how your web design comes about.
Yeah, so again, it's really orchestrated through anybody who doesn't have technical skill, you know, like me. Basically, what you have to do is you have to get really good at learning how to communicate to different people. And so what you'll see in our situation is it's a conflict between creatives and non-creatives. And so with web design – It's still an interesting battle. We have, you know, our people on the back end who will help with, you know, the web design and the functionality and everything like that. Then you have Leah who wants things to be a certain way, right? And I have the weirdest job now. My job is actually to play mediator between the two most of the time. And so, you know, I have to get good at communicating and good at understanding the situation to make the best decision, because on one hand, Leah's right. On one hand, the web developers are right. And so I have to make the executive decision for the most part on those between the two relationships.
Is this vertical profitable now?
It's getting there. It's getting okay. there. It has been a long process of mainly the cool part. If you actually, I think there's a link on there. If you actually check
right
out
to the future,
yeah. If you check out our Instagram, that has been actually the springboard where we invested your question as far as profitable and everything like that. One of the hardest things to do is to, you know, it's not a build a website and they will come. And so we had to figure out a go to market plan, you know, outside of our typical Amazon strategy. And the strategy we took, if you actually go to our Instagram, I think it has around 11,000 followers. We are extremely proud of that. That is not like, you know, your typical bot followers or anything like that. Those are all true followers of Triple Thread. They have a very high level of engagement. And where our go-to-market plan was actually to take all this clothing that we got a great deal on, and we started to send it out to people we called sponsors. and the sponsors were a lot of the pictures that you see on Triple Threat. Their job was to take pictures of them. They themselves would take pictures wearing our clothing, tag us, make us relevant, make us known, give us kind of an authoritative, you know, perception in other people's eyes. And building that 11,000 follower, 11,000 followers on Instagram was not cheap in the sense of making it truly organic. But now it's really the foundation of the business. And so we've kind of built a long-term, you know, revenue stream on that side.
Okay. So start to end, how long did it take you to where you are today? When did you start, roughly?
At least a year on that.
Okay. So a year. Let's just say 12 months.
Yeah.
Were you to replicate this, what do you think you could squeeze out of it knowing what you know today?
One thing I would not even mess around with, the first thing I'd go for is I actually wouldn't even build the website right away. I would actually go I would buy the stuff, get the Instagram set up, and send the clothes out and just have the sponsors taking pictures and tagging us in it. I wouldn't even try to sell anything.
Absolutely. Okay, so that would be – well, you could do that simultaneously while doing a lot of other things, right?
Yeah.
So you could really – so what could you shorten the time?
Probably – I bet you I can rebuild that in about 4 to 6 months. I can cut it in half.
Okay, so 4 to 6 months. So my point is this, is that you, through a lot of pain, a lot of sweat, a lot of tears, have built an incredible model, right? Mm-hmm. So you now have the ability to create a standalone business, right, because A – another standalone vertical within your business, right? So you could do Legos, a bad example. I don't know what else. Shoes.
Right.
Shoes, even easier, right? So shoes. You could create a shoe business in roughly 6 months, one that probably can do pretty close to seven figures in 6 months. I mean, think about that, Brett. I mean, thinking back to when you were working at that college, did you ever think, I mean, you seem pretty confident, right? I'm sure you have the same self-doubts that a lot of people have. Did you really think that you'd be able to get to that place and have something that, you know, I know you don't do it alone. You got a team of 50 and you got partners and stuff. But I mean, from a guy sitting in the other part of the country, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's such an accomplishment. And I mean, it's just so impressive. It just blows my mind.
No,
and
sure. I feel you on that. Every day it blows my mind. Honestly, when my mind is blown the most is when I'll be like, yeah, we'll take that, you know, truckload of something. And, here's your $130,000, you know, check for that buy.
You just write him a check.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, see you later. You know, like, I mean, those are the surreal moments where, the first thing I go, man, do I really know what I'm doing? That's the first thing that comes to my head. And then the second part of it is like, even to have the ability to do different things that I'm talking about right now is just crazy, to be honest. It's just something that, dude, I was just pumped to make an extra $500 a month.
Right.
You know?
You know, I mentioned to you offline about Dwayne when I interviewed Dwayne Malik. I mean, he said how he got into it and how he learned was he did what Brett did. Brett told him to do this. He did it. He said, I did it every day. Whatever he was doing, I did it. I didn't even ask. I just did it. And that's why he knows so much. So he gives you a lot of credit for that.
I appreciate
okay,
that.
So we've come full circle, right? So you started, you know, simple little business that has grown many different channels, right, or different – I'm going to keep calling them verticals because I like that line. It's a good vision, right, when you think mm-hmm. about it. So you've built them sustainable segments of the business. I think that we aren't really going to touch on it, but the processing center that you built where you could just take any of these little divisions and just throw their work right into your process because you've built that, you know, like your studio, your film studio, like your warehousing. You can take any of these other little companies and just move them right through that piece of it. That's a big deal in itself. I mean, that's a
for sure.
That's a big division. Distribution's a big division.
For sure.
Very important, and you're handling all these different things. I mean, another place that you're excelling at. So we've come the full circle, and I think what people, you know, thinking about what the people that I'm talking to, right? They're sellers. They're having success. They're selling on Amazon. They're selling on eBay. They're trying to create not a job. They're trying to create a viable business.
Right.
And I think we've done a good job talking about, you know, why eBay works and what works on eBay. Mm-hmm. I agree with exactly what you're saying. You're buying it for a dollar, selling it for $30. No, nothing can touch those margins. There isn't anything you can ever invest in that would give you that kind of return,
right.
Except for heroin or something terrible like that, right? And I don't even know how that is. So legally, you can't invest. How about we say it that way, right? So we also talked about RA, and I think that your point is so right on. It is not a scalable model in any long term. You can't. You'll burn out on it. The margins will start to shrink, and you'll quickly run out of cash. You'll run out of money. I don't care. Online arbitrage, another good example, but I love what you're doing with it. You're using it to keep the guys busy, right? Keep the staff busy, right? They're always working on something. You might as well make money at it. There's only one guy doing it. And I imagine that also identifies other opportunities for you,
totally.
Bundling opportunities and things like that. So it's another thing that can feed on, works with another, right? Your private label, your liquidation. Are you still doing the big liquidation business too?
Yeah, for sure. We're getting – that's actually growing – tremendously in our business, for sure. It's a
and you allow others to join and buy in with you.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah. So basically, the way that the closeout world is a nasty world, for sure. It is nasty. But if you pay on time and you start to vet out different suppliers, it's still a little slippery, but you realize it's, again, another one of those ones where you can't beat the margins. But right. You got to make sure you can get – I mean, you could just get burned so bad in that world. And so we're very selective who we buy from, but it is a nice part of our business for sure.
And again, you know, this is why, you know, talking with Brett is so crazy, because you're in so many different pieces of there, and you could actually do a whole show just on that. But – the one concept is that you do have a group that somebody could join.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's some fees, but then I could take part in some large group buys, right? Hey, we got, you know, 2,000 Huggy diapers coming
right,
in.
Right.
Steve, if you want, you know, you can buy them in lots of 500 or two pallets or whatever.
Right.
So that's another piece of your business. And I think all this is outlined on your site. So, okay, so we've come almost full circle. And now we got to the place where I think most people want to be. A standalone business with their standalone website where their majority of their income comes from something they control.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worried about 2 inches packing around. They're not worried about the size of the box, right? Is the label on right? Is
right.
this done? You know, that's where we all want to get to. So if I join the Online Empire Academy, will that help me get there? Is that the place I want to start? That's what I really want to know. I'm a seller. I've got some experience. Mm-hmm. And I really need I know that's where I want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can get you there. I wouldn't pretend. I was like, it's funny, because on the info side, we have that. It's funny you say that right now, just because one thing I was thinking on the info side, I'm like, man, I should really get the girls on some more info products, because I would love to pretend like I'm so awesome and I thought of all the different ways that Triple Threat could be successful, but I really didn't. And so I'm like, I got to help them structure some more information on that side. So I think the Online Empire Academy will get there. You know what's honestly really hard on that side is even what we were trying to do, you know, dialoguing, it is very hard to break down that process into step by step, because it's changing so fast and it's very unique to each business.
Okay, so it's a niche kind of thing, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it's more derived from, like, here's an example. I'll give you a good example, okay? So Triple Threat has two things. They have clothing, and then they have beauty. This is how quickly things change on the two, or how different things can be. The beauty stuff really is not relevant on triplethreadco.com. It's clothing-driven, right? Because the pictures are what sell. Does that make sense? The
right.
commodity of beauty did terrible on the site, did terrible, was completely irrelevant. And so what I've learned is, if someone were to talk to me today and say, hey, you know, I have eye cream, right? I probably wouldn't give them the same layout that I did for Triple Thread. I would actually, like, you know, put a unique strategy together just for them on that side.
Do you have the ability to help people with that? Is that something that you do currently, or you're thinking about in the future?
We're thinking about in the future. Right now, not prepared to give people the value they deserve on that side.
So, you know, again, let me ask it again. Where would somebody who wants to be where you're already at now, painfully there, so I get you, and you're there to say this is not an easy step, Steve. Where do you think they need to start?
Look, we built the Online Empire Academy so that you can basically get there and then, you know, get in there. And if you're like, oh, I totally get this, I already do it, you can kind of, you know, zoom right by it. But if you haven't, then we built it so that you follow those steps so that you, you know, you can get the cash in your bank. And then on top of that, you can eventually catch up to, you know, what we're currently doing. So it was actually built to have like the step-by-step process of my growing pains. But the cool thing is if you're already doing something like that, you don't have to like get stuck there. You can just move on to the next thing.
You can move on to the next module. Yeah. And you have webinars and things like that. Are they interactive in any way?
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things about Online Empire Academy now. We're really trying to and I will shout this from the, you know, highest mountain. The 120% reason that I've had any form of success is because of mentorship. 120%. And so I was lucky enough to have a father-in-law who built and scaled a very, very large business that came in as a partner with me. I would have blown up this business 100 different times by now without his mentorship. So with the academy, what we did, obviously I can't have my father-in-law meet with everyone that, you know, wants to meet, but what we thought about was, hey, this live component, because courses are great, don't get me wrong, I really like courses, you know, and you can watch them on your own time and learn, but there's a certain value proposition of being able to interact live with someone, but that's only valuable if you've prepared on the front side. But being able to interact live with an expert is so valuable because those questions that are specific to you, you have the opportunity to have them answered versus a course that becomes much more difficult. And so with the Online Empire Academy, we are making a big push to have experts on that are relevant to, you know, you. And if you want to join in on that expert conversation, you can. You have the opportunity to do it.
All right. I think people understand there's a fee to join Online Empire Academy, right?
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of the master classes are kind of a la carte. Okay. And so you can kind of check those out. Some of them are free. Some of them are paid. That's actually more dictated by the teachers themselves. We kind of just provide the platform.
Okay.
And then there's kind of a lot of different areas you can go. You can continue a la carte. I think there's a premium component. To be totally honest, my main job is I record things. And then I get them in Dean's hand, and then he sets the whole structure for it. So,
okay.
But I would really highly encourage with the Online Empire Academy and in any other place in general is when you get time, you know, even if it's on a webinar and there's, you know, 100 people or 50 people or 20 people, but you're now with that expert, make it count because that is such a hard to replicate time. And so that is the one thing I would definitely plug for the Online Empire Academy is we are pushing so that you can have some time with some experts, but don't just be silent, you know, ask some questions, make it worth your while.
Man, I tell you, this is great stuff. And I agree with you because the questions are in your mind for that split second. Get the answer, get it satisfied, and move on because you will forget it otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then you'll never get the value that you had. And you'll be like later on, oh, yeah, I should have asked that. And right now, if you can satisfy that answer in your mind, you can move on, and it just really will help you grow.
Totally.
Most of your stuff is free. I mean, it's free to join the academy.
Yep.
And then you just pay if you want to go into – and it's pretty clear because it says, hey, free resources – and here's premium resources, but you can get a lot from the free resources.
Yep.
I'm going to have all the links in the podcast. I just encourage you to go out there and take a look at it and see the things that are going on. You've heard the crazy success this young man has had. It's just incredible. And again, I love the way the vision's going. I love how you're actually getting it. I love how you're building. You know, I always describe it as building blocks, right? That foundation.
That's right.
You've got that foundation.
Yep.
You're now going up another level. And every time you do, what's cool is you're actually going back, though, and using services that you've mastered in other areas. You know, you've mastered a process. You put a process in place. It works. Now you can just immediately, oh, yeah, we can go right in that. We can do shoes. Boom. No problem, right? I just love it. I think it's just so well thought out. Man, I just wish you nothing but continued success. Best way to get you is going to be through the academy.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll have all those links. Brett, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for working around my schedule. I know you're busy. I know you got young ones. So I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us so much value and so much information.
Hey, thanks for letting me share the story. I appreciate it.
Have a great night.
So I hope you appreciate why Brett was included in the Triple Threat. It's just unbelievable. We had a great, great interview, last interview. This is incredible, this interview. Just so much information. The next one, going to be just as impressive. I think this is where you can expand your horizons. Just sit back, look out into the open space in front of you, and just think about where you could go. These guys have taken it to extremes. I'm not certain I would want to go that far, but the potential's there. And I think that's the thing you got to take away from these conversations. You're in a business, you're in an opportunity, as Gary Vaynerchuk would say, it's the second industrial revolution. You're in it. You're knee deep in it. Give yourself some credit. There are lots of people trying to get in it. You're doing it. This is what the potential could be. Now, you don't have to go that far, but there's a lot of space between where you are now and where you can be. You just have to figure out where it works for you. Thanks. Drop by the website, ecommercemomentum.com. Lots of information, lots of great links, lots of deeper discussions about many of these things. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.